briefed the minister, the department led by the minister and the deputy minister, the whole team, EDD team. Our apologies for this late start, because we wanted everyone to be here. Thank you. Minister, thank you for waiting for the call that we made. Actually, it's our request to be here, and as usual, you responded positively. Unfortunately, we have to embark on this process of BRRR, which is like a circle, a circular kind of a process. But this is the period when we finalize it through the annual reports and the audited financial statements. We have since met with your two entities, one remaining, which is the EDD, as you would know. And we also met with the AG, our AG's office, the four auditees that audit the three entities and the department. They've since given us that report, a briefing on the outcome, and we're pleased really to have heard that the department has got a clean audit. Actually, had it been not for the Competition Commission, you'd have had, together with your whole entity, 100%. We want to congratulate you for that, and for the hard work and the whole team and the teams of other of the entity. We would like to say, please keep it up. Unfortunately, this is our last meeting where we consider the annual reports for the term, that is for the fifth parliament. You might see some members, we might not see some in the next sixth parliament, but I think we must enjoy the last part of the fifth parliament. It's not going to be long. I think we're only left with 4 weeks before we wrap up things towards elections. But we're hoping to make the most out of those 4 weeks that we left with. We've gone through, obviously, the report and the summary through the presentations that you'll be presenting today. And, of course, our economy is not doing well, and we're expecting you, Minister, that you'll brief us as usual on the actual outlook, economic outlook, either of the country and also internationally. And we're more concerned interested actually in the African agenda. How far have we gone into that? Yes. Without further waste of time, may we allow the secretary to give us the apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to everyone. Chairperson, we've received two apologies for the record today, that being Ms. Matsimbi, who has a standing apology since she's still away due to academic commitments, and Ms. A. Tim Fulo is today attending the PC on Science and Technology. That will be all, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Peter Paul. Thank you. Members, I don't think we have to waste more time. Let's hand over to the Minister for the presentation. Over to Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and Excuse me. Good morning to all the honorable members, to the staff of the department, as well as to the members of the public who may be present today. Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity to account to the committee. The BRRR process, I know, is very demanding on Parliament, with parliamentary sittings across a number of committees. But it is an important instrument also, as you've pointed out, Chair, of accountability and of ensuring that departments like ourselves are able to bring together the storyline that we provide on a quarterly basis to the committee. Chairperson, in introducing the report on behalf of the Deputy Minister and myself, as well as on behalf of the Director General and his staff, we've extracted a few areas from the more detailed annual report. And the annual report, in turn, extracts core detail from the more comprehensive work that the department does over a given year. And so this gives a few snapshots, really, of our work. In the past 12 months, Chair, through the accountability to the committee, we have been able to provide quarterly reports, and the annual report will therefore really just refer to areas more briefly than we've done in the course of the year. And I'd like to make the point, Chairperson, that in the Q&A session, we would be very happy to go beyond the contents of the report and therefore appreciate the opportunity more, as the lawyers would say, to do the heads of argument here, as opposed to all the detail. The first slide that is set out on the screen sets out what we seek to do today. And it covers an introduction, some brief reflections on the economy, the strategic objectives of EDD, the highlights of its work, the annual performance plan, the human resource management plan, governance and administration, financial performance, and then briefly on the Audit General Report. What the team has done, Chairperson, in the box on the right, they've identified a few highlights that would be focused on in the report. The period of the report, of course, is the period of the financial year, 1st of April 2017 to the end of March 2018. And slide 4 is a snapshot of what's happened to the economy over the financial year. Growth in that period was 1.3%, with an expansion in sectors like agriculture, mining, and business services, and a contraction over that year in construction and trade. If we take a few selected indicators that are referred to in the annual report, and of course, this data goes to the end of March. Some of the subsequent data that has been released by Statistics South Africa goes beyond the period of the annual report. But honorable members will see in nominal terms at the end of the previous financial year, the economy was generating 4.3 trillion rand. And at the end of the financial year we're looking at now, 4.7 trillion rand. These are all in nominal terms. Total infrastructure spending went down from 275 billion to 260 billion rand. And that is, of course, always a worry, because infrastructure spending is the investment you're putting in. It's the seeds you plant for your growth. And the reason for that spending drop has essentially to do with state-owned companies. the challenges in Eskom and Transnet, together with the fact that Eskom has now reached the peak of its spending on Medupi, Kusile and Ngula, which were the three big drivers of infrastructure spending. So what we've done there now is the signing of the renewable energy agreements will now bring on stream a spike in investment from the private sector in infrastructure, in both solar and in wind energy. Inward foreign direct investment was also not as strong in this last financial year as in the previous financial year. And the focus that government is putting now on the investment conference that will be held in 2 weeks' time is intended in part to deal with this challenge to economic growth, though the investment conference will also focus very strongly on domestic investment, drawing South African companies into expanding their investment. Manufacturing value add went up in the period in nominal terms from just under half a trillion rand to just over half a trillion rand. And agriculture value add increased from 96 billion to 108 billion rand. Looking at the labor market, total employment over this period increased by 165,000 jobs. That's lower than the average growth in jobs for a period of 5 years or 25 years. On average, the economy has been growing at about 300,000 new jobs a year in the last 25 years. So a growth of 165,000 means that employment, new employment growth is slowing down. The number of new jobs held by women increased by 40,000 to 7.2 million. Youth jobs decreased in this period by 134,000. And part of the reason, not the only reason, but part of the reason is job losses in established sectors unduly hit young people because of the principle in the labor market of last in, first out. So the workers with the shortest service would tend to be retrenched first. If we take a longer time frame since the adoption of the National Development Plan, which pulls together government's overall economic vision and the society we want to achieve by 2030, honorable members will see that the economy has generated 1.8 million new jobs in that period. We talk here of net new jobs. So this is after you've taken jobs growth and job losses into account, the net effect of that was 1.8 million. And if we take a longer period since the new growth path adoption, the economy has created 2.7 million new jobs. Now, in the debate in Parliament on the state of the economy that was held a short while ago, some month and a half ago, I made some remarks on what government was doing to deal with the challenges of slow growth as well as the technical recession. And, of course, we went into a recession, and that was revealed subsequent to the information that was available at the time when we closed the financial year. The president has also announced a stimulus package subsequently, and if we take those into account, they represent the big response to slowing growth. Honorable Chair, you mentioned work done on African regional integration. If we look at the last 12 months, the most significant new markets for South African manufacturing continue to be markets on the African continent. And so an important part of our agenda is to try to create an African free trade area. And honorable members will recall in past discussions in the committee, I had referred to the tripartite free trade area that stretches from Cairo to Cape Town along the east coast of the African continent. Well, the good news is that subsequent to that, West Africa has now also come into the discussions, and at African Union level, all 50-odd member states of the African Union have agreed to a free trade area covering the entire continent, and President Ramaphosa has signed off on the matter, and the treaty has been submitted to Parliament for ratification, and as soon as we have sufficient number of parliaments who have ratified the treaty, it will come into effect, and then the hard work starts to do the trade-offs and discussion on the various aspects of the key schedules, what should be the tariff regime, and step-by-step, how do you deal with, so what's the external tariff regime, and step-by-step, how do you deal with sensitive industries. If we move to EDD specifically, the next slide sets out the strategic objectives of the department. 6 strategic objectives, 23 key performance indicators, and when we came to Parliament last year, we indicated that there were 180 products that we committed to complete in the 12 months. In the event, 195 products were achieved, and we spent 99.8% of the allocated budget. Some of the highlights are set out in slide 9, and I will deal with those in sequence briefly, but they cover changes to the Competition Act, market inquiries, mergers, the competition impact on broadening ownership in the South African economy, infrastructure coordination, industrial financing, governance and integrity, some fresh policy thinking, developments on the trade front, economic inclusion more generally, and the financials of the department. The next section then commences with a brief review of the changes to the Competition Act. It's one of the key constraints to inclusive growth, in our view, is the high levels of economic concentration across a number of markets in the economy. And during the year, I had gazetted a draft competition amendment bill that was in the first of December 2017. It's a major reform of the Competition Act, which was signed into law by President Mandela 20 years ago. And the purpose of the bill was to seek to address concentration and the spread of ownership of firms in the economy and enhance policy and institutional frameworks and procedural mechanisms in the administration of the Act. Over the year, the proposed changes to the Competition Act generated significant public interest, with more than 60 submissions received just by the department alone, and we also engaged in extensive consultation at NEDLAC on the bill, which was later submitted to Parliament for consideration. Parliament is currently considering the bill, but the core of the research and technical work was done in the financial year that the report covers. Moving on to mergers and matters of public interest, we continued in this period to engage with firms on mergers, and I'm going to take as case studies a few of these mergers that we have reported back to Parliament in the course of the year. The first of this was the homecoming of Old Mutual. It was a very, very significant event that signals long-term commitment to the country, but also confidence in the country, because Old Mutual 20-odd years ago had decided in our view, mainly because of concerns about the political transition to democracy, that's our own sense of it, that influenced their thinking at the time to shift their global headquarters offshore to London. They've looked at it carefully. They've done the sums. They've looked at their returns there. They've seen where their business generates the best returns, where their biggest client bases are. And based on all of those and their engagement with government, they decided that they wanted to come back home. And in this period, the company committed to its global headquarters being in Johannesburg, listing on the JSE, high-level finance jobs in London will be brought back to South Africa. They committed to a R500 million fund to finance small black-owned businesses. They committed to no jobs being lost as a result of the merger, and they committed to increasing their BEE shareholding very significantly over the next number of years, at least to 25% of total equity, and growing it from there to best in class. Now, the importance of something like this, Chairperson and Honorable Members, is showing in a very concrete way within the rule of law and the constitutional order that one can effect transformation, that companies find ways of combining the need for strong commercial returns with transformation objectives, and that large companies are beginning to see long-term opportunity in the South African market. There are challenges that they recognize and that we recognize, but if they take the long view where they want to be in 20, 30 years' time, they see advantage to being here. Chevron is another example. It's an American-owned business, and they decided as part of their global restructuring that they would seek to dispose of businesses not only in South Africa but also elsewhere. And then they put their business out onto the market. And interestingly, there was quite a bit of competition with more than one player who wanted to buy the business. And there was a bit of competition. One business, Chinese-owned business called Sinopec, won the first round. And most of our discussion in the financial year was with Chevron and Sinopec. Subsequently, in the second round, a company called OTS, backed by Glencore, was able to activate a right to first refusal. And the same terms essentially that we had secured with Sinopec was also agreed by OTS. We will now be dealing with probably a third leg to it, because we understand that Glencore itself now has put in a bid to take full control of the controlling share of the company. Now, the kind of commitments that were made in this period is that whoever is the buyer of the refinery in Milnerton in Cape Town and the Caltex service stations will invest at least 6 billion rand additional capital spending to upgrade the refinery and ensure a better environmental impact of the fuels that are produced there, that they will maintain or increase levels of procurement from local suppliers. That's quite key in the economy because it's what businesses buy by way of equipment and other goods and services that is their multiplier effect. That you don't have a company operating on its own and importing all of its goods and its staff, but it creates operations and opportunities in its supply chains. It also agreed to maintain aggregate levels of employment for the next 5 years and to increase BEE from 25 to 29%. And in the Chinese deal, which of course fell away in the OTS deal, but in the Chinese deal, we had an innovative clause that would have given us access, South African manufactured goods access, to all the shops that are attached to a Sinopec garage right across China. And that would have been quite an interesting breakthrough for South African manufacturing. Moving on to the next slide. Coca-Cola, honorable members will recall, Coca-Cola was a deal that we concluded about a year and a half ago, perhaps 2 years ago even. But in the past financial year, a new merger filing took place, where Coca-Cola, in the first one that we spoke years ago to the committee, they essentially combined three bottling operations into one. So call that transaction one. But at the time, Coca-Cola was in partnership with SAB Miller. SAB Miller did the bottling. When SAB Miller was taken over by AB InBev, Coca-Cola stood back and said, we're not comfortable that a big part of our bottling is done by AB InBev. We're going to activate our right our right to buy back the shares. And because it's then a change in control and ownership, they had to come back to the competition authorities. And in that discussion, we had a frank look at the business and its long term. And in the discussions, we reached an agreement with Coca-Cola that they will continue to maintain the aggregate level of employment in the company for an additional approximately 2 years. We say approximately because the clock resets each time a new transaction takes place. So based on our guesstimate, it would probably be a total of 5 years that employment is guaranteed. BEE shareholding would increase. Initially, we had agreed it would increase from 11% to 20%. It would now be increased from 11% to 30%. And that would mean that you'd have a constant flow of dividends back into the economy, into the local economy. As Coca-Cola makes money, a portion of that money comes back to South Africa. And they also committed to provide South African companies with a fair opportunity to bid to become the controlling shareholders in the African bottling operations. That process is still underway. Next, we aggregate, if we look at the year as a whole, from these key competition filings, and we're not looking at all, just some of the more strategic ones, through the efforts of the department, we secured a 6 billion rand fresh investment commitment and a 700 million rand commitment to put funds into supplier development, localization, small business development. In other words, things that are not commercially what companies would ordinarily do. These would be add-on to try to expand the development impact. Next, we move to ownership structures. I have covered some of these, but I'm going to perhaps just refer to one or two specific ones. The first is the Appetizer storyline, where Appetizer was bought by Coca-Cola, and normally it would become part of Coca-Cola's portfolios held in Atlanta. And all the profits made from all the local brands that Appetizer buys all over the world would flow only to the global shareholders. In a interesting deal that we put together with Coca-Cola, it was agreed that shareholding in Appetizer would be kept separately, and that while Coca-Cola would be the controlling shareholder, 21% of the shares would be held in South African hands. And so it's increased from what would have been effectively 0% to 21%. Chevron, I've covered that we will have at least 29%, and in fact, higher than 29% because of the OTS transaction. But we'll release the final details once the final competition filings have been considered by the authorities and concluded. And then the black shareholding in construction business Murray and Roberts is now 100% through the sale of the business to a black-owned consortium. And we've seen in other parts of the construction industry also a significant transformation. And three of South Africa's largest construction companies are working with about seven black construction firms to grow those firms' revenues to at least 25% of the larger firms estimated $7.5 billion. Now, the importance of this, honorable members, is a shift in some ways in the model of BEE. The old model was getting a percentage of shares in an existing company to be made available to black shareholders. Now, that continues to be an element of it. But what we're much more focused on now is building companies that are started, run, and owned by black South Africans so that you increase the number of enterprises in the economy and the additional wealth creation. That we don't look at it only as redistribution, but also new wealth creation as part of the model that is being followed. Market inquiries were held into a number of key sectors, LPG, private healthcare, grocery retail, high data costs in passenger transport, and some of these are continuing. On infrastructure, the PICC monitored projects involving about 190,000 jobs. Some of the very significant job-creating projects were at Kusile and Medupi. And in the medium term, we need to keep an eye on the fact that more and more of Kusile and Medupi's units are now being completed. And then you'd have a reduction in employment in those mega projects. The PICC monitored about 325 specific infrastructure projects, had a number of meetings, SIP reports, 69 SIP reports were generated, 8 infrastructure projects were unblocked, 4 cabinet decisions were implemented, and 4 initiatives enhanced local procurement. On the Tirisano Fund, we've given details previously to the committee, and we indicate here that in the financial year, the High Court authorized the establishment of the Tirisano Fund, and we had the first funds flowing into the fund. Practically, for SIP 5, on Sunrise LPG Import Terminal Facility, we built, the country built a large terminal gas facility in Saldanha, here in the Western Cape, and we opened it officially in August last year. It is the largest of its kind on the African continent. And we provide information here of the amount of metric tons of storage that is now available to the country in Saldanha. And honorable members will, if ever you were traveling past Saldanha and you were able to visit the facility, which of course is a high security facility, so it's not easily accessible, but you'll see these 5 large storage, what they call bullets, in which the gas is stored. And we had provided to the committee years ago, members with deep memories will recall, photographs of how they were building these massive bullets in Saldanha. So that's now all been completed. Local steel was used to produce these bullets, and there's a pipe that stretches into the sea for about 3 kilometers. And it was fascinating to see how it was all done. And it's basically building a modern system that allows us to tap into global gas markets and provide that to South Africans. On industrial financing, in this year, the IDC approved funding of 16.7 billion rand. This is money directly that the IDC is committing to make available in the economy. And I should make the point, it's an important point to make, that government gives no money to the IDC. It hasn't given the IDC fresh equity since 1994. In fact, since the 1950s. So the IDC has to run a model where it has to generate profit to be able to fund the development mandates that we give it. In Brazil, they have a different model. Their model there is every month, government makes money available to the IDC equivalent. It's done almost like we do with our unemployment insurance fund. It's a small levy on workers and employers. And their IDC then is able to utilize this to provide soft loans. So one of the challenges that many companies have when they get funding from the IDC is that they hope that it would be very concessional, very cheap. But of course, the IDC has to make a return to pay for the next loan that it makes to the next company. So we were pleased that it made at least commitments of 16.7 billion rand. 9.7 billion was to black empowered companies. And if you take black industrialists, and the difference between the two, a black empowered company is a company where black South Africans have a significant shareholding. But a black industrialist is where majority shares are held by a black South African and they run the operation. So for black industrialists, it amounted to 7.9 billion rand for the past financial year. That makes it by far the largest source of funding for bringing black South Africans into the productive economy. 2.2 billion for women-empowered companies, and call it about 1 billion rand for youth-empowered companies. The IDC, based on completion of all the projects that it's approved in the financial year, projects that all of the investments that I've just spoken of will either create or save 29,885 jobs. I should recall, honorable members, that in the budget vote 3 years ago, we had set a target for women-empowered transactions over the five-year period of 4.5 billion rand. The IDC has now exceeded that. They've achieved 6.6 billion. We had also set a target of youth-empowered businesses, and we basically have achieved 98% of that 4.5 billion. And we've got 2 years left, so we will no doubt exceed that quite strongly. And we're so far ahead of the target on the black industrialist funding. The target, the five-year target, was 23 billion, and we've achieved 67% of that with the expiry of three of the 5 years. Now, when these targets were set in 2015, they were regarded as almost unachievable, given the baselines that we had achieved prior to this. And it shows that with hard work and with dedication by the entities, we can begin to get things done in different ways. Now we need to strengthen the quality of these, make sure that the businesses that we support are able to export aggressively, that they're able to claim a stronger part of the domestic market from imports, so that you have greater net wealth creation. The department itself facilitated or unblocked about 14 investment initiatives, most of which we reported in the form of case studies in the quarterly reports. But just to take a few examples, working with a local producer who supplies wheels for trains, we had managed to get some business from Transnet for the local producer rather than importing the wheels. We had been for many years, the IDC had battled with Score Metals. It had bought Score Metals when Anglo American divested the firm, and we were concerned at the time that the firm would either collapse or it would be taken over by someone that would essentially asset strip the operation. But in the period, the financial year, we were able to get a sale of some of the IDC, some of the Score Metal businesses, and the new owner also made commitments on employment and supporting steel manufacturers with steel inputs. The IDC continues to be a shareholder in these businesses, but it's bringing fresh capital and fresh enterprise from private sector players. We supported the Kuga IDZ to procure locally manufactured transformers, helped a cement company to get a water use license, supported a textile company in getting an order from South African Police Services and Eskom, supported PPXL in accessing the electricity grid, a smelter in the negotiation of energy tariffs, and Massmart, which owns Game and Dion and Macro and Builders Warehouse. They came to the end of the fund that the Competition Appeal Court had imposed on them some 5 years ago. And they had spent the money. And based on the relationship they had developed with the department and what they saw as value actually that's come out of this, they've been very open. They said, we were forced by government to do this. We didn't like it. But when we look back now, actually it's a good thing that it's happened to us, because it forced us to find new local suppliers that we otherwise would not have had. And some of those local suppliers are now beginning to supply globally into the Walmart group. And what Massmart then decided is they will now continue on a voluntary basis with this fund, even though the five-year period had expired, and they're going to put 30 million per annum, or certainly 30 million in the first year, into this fund. The PICC on governance and integrity. Governance and integrity was a big issue in this past financial year. It was the issue when the questions around state capture came up very strongly in looking at business confidence and the growth of the economy. And in this period, we released last year the results of a study that showed that corruption is not a victimless crime. And it was at the time, there was no other information in the public domain. So based on certain assumptions we made about the cost of overpayment, taking into account experience internationally, and also what we were picking up from some of the court cases, we did some estimates of the potential cost of corruption. On an assumption of a 10% overpayment in infrastructure as a result of corruption, we identified that the effect on the economy would be a loss of 27 billion rand in annual GDP and 76,000 jobs that would be foregone as a result of it. Last year, the IDC also introduced a range of measures to strengthen transparency and governance, and these included public disclosure of the name of IDC beneficiaries, including politically exposed persons. This is quite an unusual step for a bank to take, because banks, including development banks, which are publicly owned throughout the world, keep their client base. It's a banking relationship, so that's normally confidential. So it was quite a significant shift, and we didn't take it lightly, but the price the society pays when you have transactions that are not, that has no economic merit, that are done for improper motives, is so high that we had to breach the confidentiality of transactions by requiring public disclosure. And so that now is available on the IDC website, and there's been media reporting on it. And I think it's good that there's sunlight on all of these. Initially, it would lead to quite a bit of debate, but eventually it will settle and people would be able to look at the merits of the transactions. In July last year, we asked the IDC to change their auditors, which were KPMG, as a result of what had emerged in the public domain about KPMG. And it was an unusual thing, because it may well have been, it was certainly the first public sector entity to do so. But it may well have been even the first entity in South Africa to take that decision. The IDC also last year instituted litigation against Oak Bay Resources for the recovery of funds advanced. We've answered parliamentary questions. That matter is now currently before the courts, and so we can obviously not anticipate, but the case is proceeding. On fresh policy thinking, there were two more noteworthy initiatives last year. The first is a conference with Nobel laureate Joseph Stiglitz, where we had South African thought leaders from across government, business, labor, and academia, which explored options for industrialization and high growth in the 21st century. And in red, you see some of the ideas that came out of it. And essentially, the core one was to say, if we look, Professor Stiglitz had done some work looking at global manufacturing. And his conclusion was that Asia had used a manufacturing-led industrial strategy. China, Korea, in an earlier period, Japan, Malaysia, these are examples of countries that did it. And he argued that Africa needs to do the same, but we're not going to get the jobs dividend that Asia got. And there were two reasons for it. The first reason is Asia had already consolidated its presence so significantly there. And the second thing is technological innovation and automation in manufacturing and productivity growth in product in manufacturing meant that the global number of new jobs in manufacturing would not keep up with output. Output would go faster than jobs because of productivity increases. And what it meant is that South Africa has to invest a lot more on trying to squeeze jobs through smart agriculture, mining, and the service sector. And so beneficiation is a key part of what we need to do in future, but also getting into the service sector much more actively and aggressively. The other bit of fresh policy thinking was on the fourth industrial revolution. And this committee, I must say, is the first committee in Parliament that actually dealt with the fourth industrial revolution. So the Economic Development Portfolio Committee, I think, helped to stimulate fresh thinking from all of us. And we held a symposium in December last year at the Telkom headquarters, bringing together the business community, technology entrepreneurs, and organized labor and academics to look at what is required. 14 work streams were identified. The president announced that the country would set up a fourth industrial revolution commission or a digital economy commission. And since then, of course, a lot of work has been done. Parliament itself has taken on board the issue of the fourth industrial revolution. And there was a joint work session between the National Assembly and the NCOP at which I, together with a few other colleagues, were asked to present the thinking in government on the fourth industrial revolution. The next slide deals with a few specific areas around fresh policy thinking, regional integration, African regional integration, which I referred to in my opening remarks, continue to be a key issue. So we bring periodically to the committee the results of work done analyzing the exports and, in fact, broader trade between South Africa and neighboring countries. Exports to the rest of the continent continue to account for about a quarter million direct jobs, and we completed case studies on Kenya, Mozambique, Tanzania, and Zimbabwe, and extracted the policy challenges and recommendations. On trade policy, our key work has been to ensure that trade policy remained aligned with employment and investment objectives. Key work done in this period covered the steel and metals value chain, and honorable members will recall in the previous administration we had issued a trade directive on beneficiation, essentially requiring local scrap metal to be offered to local players first. We were taken to court by the exporters, and as we indicated previously, we successfully defended the directive to ITAC in a court case in the Gauteng High Court. We also successfully defended it in the Cape High Court and the Supreme Court of Appeal. And then the parties petitioned the Constitutional Court for the right to take it to the Constitutional Court. We objected to it, and we were successful, and the matter now is settled. We have just now recently extended for a 9-month period the directive, whilst government does work on a long-term policy proposal dealing with export of scrap metal. And we coordinating the establishment of an export tax to replace the price preference system. So that's the ideal solution that we see, and we're doing work on that at the moment with National Treasury. Another case study perhaps to point to in this past year that's been a success is Highveld Steel. In 2016-17, the previous financial year, EDD had connected ArcelorMittal and Highveld Steel. This had led to reopening of a steel facility in Mpumalanga. And during April 2017, the steel mill started production, and it turned an old complex into a multi-purpose industrial hub. The structural steel mill was reopened on an assumption of tariff support. There were challenges with this. We helped to unblock it. There was an independent investigation, and the duties were recommended and approved. And in fast-tracking the implementation of the duty, the department worked closely with the company, and we provide some of the details there. The outcome of it is Africa's only railway line manufacturer is now Highveld Steel. Now all we need to do is to make sure that Transnet and PRASA and hopefully railway companies elsewhere on the continent too begin to buy significant quantities of this railway line. On economic inclusion, we reviewed the implementation of the Youth Employment Accord. A number of initiatives were supported. The Deputy Minister led a lot of the work, and he drove the engagement at provincial level to open up the economy to young people and to ensure funding by the IDC for women-empowered companies. Youth-empowered companies is in his engagement with provinces, and all of that is part of giving effect to the work that we had mandated the IDC to do. Our work also included the tracking of employment across a number of large infrastructure projects. We hosted various sessions across the country in this period. For example, a session with young entrepreneurs in Mangaung in November, where 300 young entrepreneurs were able to engage, exhibit their products, say what their problems were, and engage with key partners. We held a meeting in the spirit with young workers on jobs and increasing skill levels in Appletizer in their factory in the Western Cape, with the unemployed youth of Atlantis, and with young workers in trade unions. We also convened a conference on empowering communities of Sarah Baartman District Municipality, and Deputy Minister did a significant part of the work with the officials of the department at provincial level. The Vembe District Municipality Policy Dialogue is referred to in the work there, as well as some of the other areas. Turning next to the financials, we received our audit outcome. Honorable Chair, as you indicated, it was a clean audit, and Honorable Kliani has promised that when we get a clean audit, he will ensure that we have lunch in Vilakazi Street. And Honorable Cardo has said that if we get a clean audit, he will take the Minister and Deputy Minister to a nice lunch at a Chinese restaurant, no, at a South African restaurant. So I'm looking to the two honorable members to see whether they will deliver on their undertakings. And the chair, of course, is also looking to them. But more seriously, especially Dr. Cardo, the chair is particularly keen on ensuring that the dinner with Dr. Cardo takes place. Was it the lunch? We're very flexible, Dr. Cardo. We could shift it to a lunch. But I think what it shows is that it was an overall improvement in the control environment in the department with fewer findings compared to previous financial years. With this kind of thing, though, it just requires constant vigilance because we've created a rules-based system that is very demanding. And so it means the state must up its game and ensure that it has staff that keeps ensuring that we follow the procedures, that we account properly for public money. And there are often frustrations in this, but it is public money, so there is a need for accountability that must be constantly improved. On the annual performance plan, this is something that Parliament had introduced a number of years ago. It requires departments to say upfront what they will do and thereafter to say how well have they done against what they said they would do. And the tables published in the annual report provide an overview of the number of achievements and also where there's a variation, which normally was to do slightly better than planned. What was the reason for that variation? The annual report contains more detail of the information that we've summarized on slide 34. It's an overview of the total KPIs for each budget program. So in administration, we had two KPIs, and we completed both. On growth path in social dialogue, we had six KPIs, and we completed all six. In investment, competition, and trade, we completed 10 KPIs. 10 of the 15 were completed on target. And five, we had exceeded the targets, which meant that of the 23 KPIs, in 18 we achieved it, and in five, the department exceeded the targets. And there's more information given of the number of products that were completed, 195 deliverables over the period. The next slide, 35, summarizes these products into 116 reports. What the reports did, it's not research reports. These are reports on actual work that were done. So in a number of cases, they would basically be a close out on a set of work that the department had done. 33 action minutes, an action minute similarly would indicate that we had an action that we targeted, and the action minute would provide the evidence of the achievement of that action. 44 records of engagement, meetings, and coordination, that would be the kind of things that we do with the IDC, with ITAC, with the competition regulators, and it's the instrument through which there is oversight, ministerial oversight, of the agencies to ensure that we are able to achieve the strategic goals. Obviously, we don't deal with each of the operational issues there, but at least to keep them on track on the key goals of expanding jobs. Two products for finance and HR were completed. The department has put together for ourselves, for the committee, the governance and accountability tool, which is called Impact, and the ratings that the department had achieved in this period. And there's a further breakdown on slide 37 giving additional information on where the department had done particularly well, where there's scope to improve a little bit further. On human resource management, the department employs staff on a permanent basis as well as fixed-term contracts for specific projects and secondments. We still run quite a large secondment program where effectively the department doesn't pay, but we try to prevail on other departments and agencies to carry the ball for various infrastructure-related work that is done. 49% women in senior management positions, 10 HR policies were reviewed. Looking at slide 39 on personnel expenditure, it provides a breakdown of the information that was set out in the annual report in a little bit more detail. Personnel expenditure by salary band is provided in slide 40. These all summarize information that has been available in the annual report. And the annual report, of course, contains this information in more detail. For the year under review, the department spent 99.8% of the budget. And from the work that we've done, it's within the range of what we plan to do. Of course, public entities are expected, and the department is expected not to exceed, and it's always hard, therefore, to get to exactly to 100% without the danger of overspending. In looking at the breakdown, the department, I provided in the budget speech earlier this year a breakdown of the allocation for the current financial year. This slide, 42, provides information on the breakdown for the current for the previous financial year. And honorable members will see the department is in green, and the department accounts for a relatively small portion of the total funding that is made available. The commission and CIFA are the big beneficiaries of the funding. A significant part of the funding, the Steel Fund and Tirisano Fund, is really monies that are being generated from the private sector itself, and then it comes through a parliamentary process. The next slide is the financial performance per program, setting out the budget allocation for each program for the financial period we're looking at. And by way of a comparator, we've also included details on the prior financial year. And honorable members will see there that the budget, for example, of administration in that period has come down from 92 million to 85 million. So there's an attempt inside the department to try to do more with fewer resources, to trim down the size of the overheads and the admin support. If you do that, if you cut too deeply, then of course you don't have an efficient machinery. But if you spend too much money on administration, then there's not enough money for your troops on the ground who have to do the engagement with small businesses, with projects in the economy. So we try to get that balance right. And therefore, areas around policy increase from 29.8 million to 31.7 million. And in the same period, the big change was in investment, competition, and trade. And that is explained by increases to the agencies, because the money for the agencies are all parked in that program. The financial performance per economic classification is set out on slide 44, dealing with compensation of employees. And again, honorable members will see that the budget was cut. We again tried to get the department to do more with a lower budget. The actual expenditure rose relatively marginally from about 85 to 88.5 million. Goods and services, honorable members will see the numbers there, that again, we cut the budget, and we also cut, in practice, the expenditure. So the department looks for innovative ways of funding its programs. For example, when we did the big program with Professor Stiglitz, typically a program like that would cost well over R1 million. You're flying a Nobel Economics laureate to South Africa. Inviting people from all over the country and so on. You give speakers fees. That's what the state normally does. In this particular way, given the fiscal constraints, we tried our best. And Professor Stiglitz, essentially, we didn't pay for his flight to South Africa. We didn't pay for hotels. We didn't pay for, we paid no speakers fee. So we basically got all of that free of charge. We entered into a partnership with university Wits University, and they paid for the venue and for some of the snacks. So all we ended up is pay for some of the catering, And I think we flew perhaps two or three academics from Durban and Cape Town to the conference, and Wits also flew some of the persons. So it's an example of just trying to see how can we still get the work done in a fiscally constrained environment where we can't stop the work, but we've got to be able to leverage resources. Honourable members will take note of the other areas there. Capital spending came down very sharply from 2.7 million to 1 million. It's not sustainable to have such a low level of capital spending in the department. Those would be things like your equipment, your computers, basically the tools of trade, vehicles, and so on. And we've not been upgrading in any of those. So thinking long term, there would need to be a rebalancing of that, because eventually it's not a good efficiency to underspend on capital side because your tools of trade become blunter. But we are trying, given all the constraints on the fiscus, to operate within these more constrained environments. Transfers to entity, this is where the big changes took place. The Competition Commission got more money. The Tribunal got more money. ITAC got a fair bit more money. And then CIFA, the transfer increased from 213 to 223 million. And, of course, the IDC had a transfer that the IDC manages. So, in other words, this is not for IDC work, traditional work. This is the Tirisano Fund, the Steel Fund, and the work done by the PICC unit there. On the revenue side, there were small sums. We're not really a seller of goods and services, but we did get a significant amount of money, 117 million in from the construction settlement agreement. There was also interest, dividends, and you see there that the bulk of the money was set out. The dividends is from the IDC, and that gets passed to National Treasury. Cash received for the revenue fund, honorable members will see in slide 47, amount received, the amount paid over to the revenue fund, and the reason for the large sum on our balance sheet was that essentially the monies came through late in March, I think the 27th of March, and it was then paid over to the National Revenue Fund on the 4th of April. So as at the closure of our books, it still stayed in EDD's books. So here one sees just what a big profit generator the competition authorities continue to be for government. And really the argument around the long-term fund flows are well illuminated by looking at, I mean, it's not the purpose of these authorities to generate funds, but they do generate enormous funds with the penalties that they charge. Chairperson, that brings us to a conclusion. The DG has done a lot of work around the finance and the HR. The Deputy Ministers led our work not only at provincial level, but on a lot of the work on economic inclusion. And I'm sure when the questions are asked, they would be very happy to also elaborate a little bit and provide some detail. I do recognize it's a very brief summary of a much wider set of work, but they could best be read together with the annual report and the four quarterly reports that were submitted to Parliament. Chairperson, the committee has been really great in keeping us on our toes, getting us to account where we've slipped up. The fact that we have to come back to Parliament helps to draw attention to those things and give us the opportunity to fix the issues where we've slipped up. So I want to, given that this is the last time that the annual report will be presented to the Portfolio Committee in this administration, I'd like to appreciate very much the work of the committee, the opportunities at the various quarterly reports to account to Parliament, and to hope that parliamentarians, honourable members, can see the value of your oversight in some of the work that we've done. It's not just the team this side that helps to make things work. It's also the team that side. Your job is different. You're not in management and administration, but accountability is part of ensuring an effective delivery service. So thank you very much, Chairperson, for this opportunity to introduce the annual report.
Thank you so much, Honorable Minister, and the team. We really appreciate this particular briefing. I think we all have the annual report, and just to respond to your to the last message that you just brought for us, Minister, we would have loved to really call you more often for reporting. It's just unfortunate that in the past 2 years, I think we've experienced a lot of program changes and shifts. As a result, it affected also our program, hence we could not really ask you to come. But we really appreciate the fact that whenever you are called, you are here and you are able to respond to our queries and concerns. This, no one would ever claim that you haven't provided that opportunity to respond to any of our questions. And this is a rare occasion. We feel privileged because it's not what other committees, most committees really enjoy. But as this committee, whenever we call you, unless you have a reason not to come, do indicate. Thank you so much for that. That's public service at its highest form. Thank you. Members, we have heard what the Minister has said. That was just a summary of the whole annual report, which is including the financial statement, 158 pages. So that was summarized into how many slides, Minister? 47 slides. Actually, 47 slides. So we'll obviously rely on the questions that you've asked, or that you are to ask, so that you are able also to share with the public out there what you understand by this department, the work of this department for the year. It's our role to hold them accountable. So let's interact with the report. Okay, Dr. Kado, Ms. Atkinson.